So get your Bibles out, folks, because what I want to do is I want to speak to you about something today and over the next few weeks. Actually, it came out of a talk that I did a number of weeks ago, and I think it touched a nerve with a few people. And I want to talk to you today about overcoming doubt. And I'm going to talk about it next week, because this is one of the areas, particularly when you sit under the gospel of grace, where and you sit under a message which says you can believe for more. You were made for more and you were built for more. There is more in you today, and God has more for you than you could ever hope or dream of. I mean, that's a message that should light some of you up and go, flipping, right? I'm signing up for that. Amen? Yes?
Oh, somebody just not so sure. I don't know. I'm kind of happy being miserable. Thank you very much. I'm just all right. Oh.
Well, my goodness, it lights me up. But the issue for us, as what we're going to find, is there's a story in the Bible where we look at it and we go, God, that is it. That's me. And whenever you look at those stories, and it's actually got Jesus in it, which is really helpful, because the ministry of this church is to reveal Jesus in all of his beauty, all of his glory, and all of his grace. You see that actually how limited we are in terms of our language. Because we talk about faith all the time. You've got to have faith. Does that ever go in your head? You gotta have faith. But then we talk about unbelief, and then we say to people, you know, do you have faith for this, and do you have faith for that, and do you have faith for the other? And we have this big kind of faithometer, and it's kind of as soon as the faithometer gets up to a certain bit, then the blessing of God is released because your faith was just high enough. And it's absolute tripe, because that's not the nature of faith. I'm going to talk about faith next week. I'm going to talk about great faith, little faith. You have little faith. You have big faith. Faith the size of a mustard seed. Because I'm going to do all that next week. I'm going to show you actually that when there's no inconsistency in grace, there's no inconsistency in God. We're going to look at those and go, well, what, you know, because when I used to read that, whenever we were infertile and couldn't have kids, I used to think, well, God, the problem is my faith. And good-meaning Christians would say, I remember, you know, some people praying for people, and they would stop and go, do you want to be well? And I'd go, shut up. No, I want to be sick. Like, what kind of a stupid question is that? Why would I come forward for you to pray for me if I wasn't quite sure whether I wanted to be well? Pray there, and sure, we'll see what the Lord does. You know, we talk so much nonsense at times in the body. Putting people under pressure. Do you want to be well? Do you have faith? Well, I don't know. All I know is I don't want to be sick. You know, all I know is I don't want to be broke. All I know is that I don't want to live like this. I want so much more. Can you help me with that? There's a story we're going to look at today in Mark chapter 9, where there's a guy and he has his son, and he goes, listen, I do believe, but help me with my unbelief. Anyone? Oh, I do believe, Lord, but help me with my unbelief. Does anyone understand what it's like to live between those two posts? You know, no, I do want to see it, but really, help me where I can't see it. I do understand it, but I'm not seeing it. Help me, Lord. But I mean, I'm believing, but I'm not believing all at the same time. Anyone? All the super Christians go, no, I never have a doubt. For dear sake. Did you not see me levitating here this morning? On a cloud of holiness? I can't believe that you would ever have a doubt about the Lord. Gee whiz, what is wrong with you? I said to you a few weeks ago that you don't point your faith, whatever that means next week, we'll explain it again, towards things. You don't have to have faith for this, and you don't have to have faith for that. That is misdirected and wasted faith. You do not have to have faith for things and outcomes. And we ask ourselves this, and we ask people, well, do you have faith to be well? Shut up. Do you have faith for this? Shut up. You don't ask me that again, or you'll get nutted. Because I just said that. I'm sorry for the visitors. I'm really sorry. They're thinking, God, get me out of here. All right. Pastor's going to nut people. But what I want to do is say to you is that actually what we need to do, we need to apply our belief to the root of the issue, which is condemnation. Because your enemy doesn't come and tinkle around the edges, like I said in our freedom series. He doesn't do that. What he does is he goes straight for the root, because a condemned man will not receive anything. Because he believes he should be punished. And so our faith is in righteousness. All right? And what happens in John 15, you start to see how the Bible works. When we are rooted and grounded in the love of God, according to Ephesians 3, we see the fullness of God. When we're attached to the vine, as branches, fruit comes effortlessly. And so and so many times in my life, I have thought, I need to have faith. Can I have faith for this? And I don't really have faith for that. And I don't really know what to believe half the time. And God, I believe, but help me with my unbelief, please. Yeah. Okay, and what I started to say was, listen, when you're truly established in righteousness, everything else will flow, says the Word. And so the way we use faith And the gift that's been given to us is directed exactly that way. And I want to say to you as well at the start of this kind of mini-series that what I love about this is Jesus is the only one who qualifies you for every single blessing. Let's just get absolutely sure. Your faith doesn't qualify you for Jack, because it is every blessing comes through the fact that Jesus kept every commandment. When he went to that cross, he not only fulfilled every commandment and every bit of the law, he also redeemed you from the curse of the law so that you could receive. Every single time. You might say, well, I don't deserve to be blessed today. I don't deserve any of God's goodness. No, you don't deserve them, but you get them still because of Jesus. He qualifies you today. It's all going to be about him. That is the grace of God. Then, you know, when you operate under law, the law says, well, you have to do something to deserve the goodness of God. But the law is no longer applicable to you today. Hey, that's good news. How dare you say that? You're no longer subject to the law because he set you free. No longer here. Law is, as it says in Hebrews, the law is obsolete, no longer fit for purpose. So what we have to do is we have to walk in this new dispensation, New Testament, New Covenant faith and belief. It's not about doing to receive as we understand, but it's about how much can you believe in what he has done. Do you get that? That's the game now. And that's where we all go, oh, for flip's sake. I'm knackered if that's the case. Because I believe, but God help me with my unbelief. So we're going to look at that story. Does that sound okay? Well, tough, because I'm going to do it anyway, and I'm on the stage, all right? So I want to say to you, well, actually, I'm not very happy with that one, Andrew. Well, tough, I've prepared it. And so it's no longer a question. What I'm going to say to you over the next few weeks is this is no longer a question about how well you're done, how well you've kept God's commandments. The issue for God and how he blesses you is, can you believe that I'll do it? All the promises of God, according to 2 Corinthians 1, verse 20, every single one of God's promises are yes. Think about that for your life right now. Where's the lack? Where's the bit that's missing? Every single promise written in the word about that area is yes and amen in Jesus. Oh, God, I believe it, but help me where I don't believe. I believe it, but help me where I don't believe. What we're going to find out is how limited our language is. Have you ever had the occasion where you just can't articulate exactly what's going on? Yeah? So you end up just making noises like, or saying nothing. But you feel something so very, very deeply, but you just can't articulate it. Language is very, very limited. And we're going to see as we go through today that Jesus actually, whenever we look at the New Testament and Jesus talks about faith and unbelief, and he says you have to believe, and we go, really? Okay, help me with that. He actually used lots of different words. And they all show something different about how we need to receive love. It's amazing. But we just have belief. It's kind of arbitrary. It's binary. It's blunt. Have faith. Believe. Okay, I don't really feel like I've got any of those. Great faith, oh, I'm really in trouble. Little faith, that's me, et cetera, et cetera. But actually what we're going to find is that Jesus uses different words. I'm going to talk today about unbelief, just to tee this up. Let me just give you an example. If we look at the word for faith, Jesus said to him, if you can believe, here's a word, pisteo. Next slide, if we go there. If you can believe, this is the G is a reference for the concordance. So you're going to learn something today. You're going to learn, and you should write these down. Pisteo is G4100, okay? And it's rooted in a word, apatheia, okay? Which I'm going to explain to you in a minute. It's really important. But we see this. This is the kind of examples that we said. If you can believe, all things are possible for him who believes. Okay, scrunch my eyes up. Let's go for it, Lord. I'm going to really believe. I'm going to start off today going, Lord, I really believe that you're good. I really believe that I'm going to see breakthrough. I really believe I'm going to have my financial breakthrough. I really believe I'm going to get this job, and then it doesn't happen. No. The problem is there that I didn't believe. Do you understand in the area of belief, what we do is we say, the Son has set us free, and now let me put you right back under law, because if you don't believe, you're not going to receive. All right? And if we're not careful around that, what we find is we put people back under shackles. We put them back under law. And we live continually defeated. Jesus said something so much different. Let's look at Luke 18 as an example. He said, Jesus said to him, receive your sight, your faith, in English, it's a different word, G4102, pistis, has made you well. I mean, that's the word that he uses the whole way through receiving physical healing. It's used in the area of salvation, this word, pistis, G4102. All right? And in fact, The whole deal for Christians today is summarized in Hebrews 10:38. It says this, that now the just shall live, that's you and me, will experience God's gift of life. So if you want to experience the promise of God, the life of God, you want to live above your circumstances and allow the life of God to make you more than a conqueror, all the stuff we talk about, it's going to come by faith. Oh, wick. I believe. Help me with unbelief. Is it that the gospel and Jesus this morning can take some of these things that have wrapped us up and made things really hard for believers and do away with them, and we get a revelation of Jesus and his work, and it allows us to live free? That's what we're going to do. Is that good? Because if you sit here this morning going, I do believe, but sometimes I don't, then this is a word for you. This is a word for you. Because, like I said, all my worst fears used to come true whenever people used to say to me, do you have faith? Do you have enough faith? I used to feel so weak and insecure and rubbish. I used to say all the right things. Oh, yes, brother, absolutely. Bring the devil on, I'll knock his stuffing in, no sweat. And inside I'm dying of death, going, oh, I'm not really sure. I feel like a bit of a fraud. Yeah. Okay, so let's get into it. Here's some incredibly good news. I'm just going to tee this up for you. These two words that I've used this morning, all right, you're going to see them in the ministry of Jesus. And he's going to talk about faith, and he's going to talk about belief and unbelief as being two different things. They're not the same. He never used the same words to communicate when you, if you believe. That's not faith. It's not one big word all mixed up. They're entirely different. And when I got this revelation in my life, it really helped me. Because the faith that I described a few weeks ago, okay, the faith that you need is this word. It's G4100, pistis, and 4102. And it is the faith that you need to receive from God is never generated by you. It is God's gift to you. So if you are in Christ this morning, you're in a relationship with Jesus, you already have faith. You have faith to believe and to receive every bit of God's finished work. Seriously, right now, you do that by faith. And you kind of go, well, hold on a second. But, you know, I'll explain it more next week. But essentially, I need you to understand that human beings never generate faith. Not God faith, anyway. The word is epistis that Jesus said here, like, if you can believe, if you can have faith, it is always a gift from God. It's never something that can be produced by people. In short, it's this persuasion inside of us that God is who he says he is, that he will do what he says he will do. And it's distinct from human belief, which is simply confidence, right? And what happens is, in the whole sense of pistis, is the Lord continually births this in you every day. It's hard to say, okay? He births it in you every day. So when you get up in the morning, you shouldn't be saying to yourself, oh, do I have faith today? You should be saying, God, thank you that you have gifted me the ability to believe. All right? In the same way that you have no clue today whether you're going to heaven. Why? Because nobody's been there. You receive it by faith. You receive it as trust and confidence and persuasion on the inside. And it's that same gift is what God gives you every day to be able to receive from him. So what happens? Why does it not work? I'm going to explain faith a lot more next week, but I just want to put this out there for you this morning. You know, it's not in your power this morning. This is brilliant. It's not in your power this morning to make anything happen. But that trust and deep conviction and assurance that God is totally true and dependable is who he says he is, who he says he is, and he will do what he says he will do. It's not about you. It's about he has put that in you. It's going to be really important. It's a deep assurance about Jesus and his work, and it's always a gift from God. So can I release you this morning? The word says, we'll look at it next week. You've been given a measure of faith, or the measure of faith. I'm going to unpack some of that to show you what that looks like. Some of you will know that. Some of you won't. But essentially, whenever I started to realize that I could only ever believe in the work of Jesus and what he had done for me because he had equipped me to do so, I stopped thinking about myself and what I was doing and started to rest and receive what he had done. And so that's why you can see in the Bible, people go, you know, that's why you can live today by going, I know that I have faith, but I still don't believe. That's why Jesus talked about you can have faith and belief side by side, one on the other. And see, once you start to understand it, it actually releases you from pressure. And when you're released from pressure and trying to work, you're able to receive. Okay? And so let's read Mark chapter 9. So if you turn up Mark 9, And let's see how this is going to work. This is a great story. And when they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and scribes arguing with them. Immediately all the crowd, when they saw him, were greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, "What are you arguing about with them?" And someone said from the crowd and answered him, "Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able." And he answered them, "O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you, and how long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him, and when the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy. This is the spirit in the boy. When it sees Jesus, it convulses the boy. And he fell on the ground, and he rolled about, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood, and it has often cast him into fire and water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us." And Jesus said, "If you can." And so I was like, "Seriously? If I can? He says, "All things are possible for one who believes." Right? Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, "I believe, but help me with my unbelief." Now, who doesn't identify with that straight away? All right? I'm going to go into this a little bit more, but whenever Jesus says, "All things are possible for him who believes," he is referring to G4100. He's saying, if you have God faith in you, then everything's possible. He's not talking about human stuff. He's saying that if you've got the gift of God in you, let me just say, it's all possible. So that word belief right there, he's not saying, if you can work it up, if you can try harder, if you can get into the Word, all that stuff's important, but it doesn't generate anything because it is a gift of God in your life. Do you understand that? And so Jesus starts off by going, if you have the gift of God in you, if you receive God's ability to believe, then nothing is going to be impossible. And then the Father says, actually, I have that in me. I understand it. So help me with my unbelief. He uses a different word. He uses the word apistia. So he says, I have pisteo, but help me with my apistia. I have an apple, but help me with my orange. All right? I'm going to explain to you what that is. Because the word that the Father is using here is a word that is used time and time again where we're not convinced of God's promise or his will to change. So here's a man who's looking at his son, convulsing and the spirit trying to destroy him from he's a child. And saying, you know, God, I understand and I believe it, but I'm not really convinced of your promise to change him. Anyone ever prayed for somebody and they don't get well? And we go, God, I do believe that you're the healer, but can you help me here? Because I don't really think that you're going to change this one. And you see in one sentence where Jesus comes along and he goes, let me get you out of the way because this is about me. If you have this gift, and it's not like if you have it, like you do or you don't. The language is if you have it. Which, in this case, you do. If you have this gift as a new believer, then nothing's impossible for you. Why? Because it's not about you and what you're doing. It's about what he has done and you receive it. That's why it's not impossible for anyone. Isn't that good? And then he says, and the father goes, okay, but as I look at this situation, I'm not convinced of your promise. Can you help me with that? Do you see how that totally changes the whole narrative here? All of a sudden, it's not about, I need to do harder, and I need to try harder, and I'm caught in the middle. It's about going, actually, Lord, will you help me to look at my situation and to understand that your promise and your will is to change it? That's what he's talking. That's one of the words, and we're going to look at them a little bit later. And this is the battle. This is it. This is the experience. I think I've walked this, and we probably all have walked this for so many years, haven't we? Caught between this place of, God, I do believe you, but I really need help when I can't just muster it up. When I feel like I can't get there, when I'm not seeing it change. Jesus talked a whole lot, actually, about doubt and unbelief. He encouraged people not to be in doubt or in unbelief. Why? Because it stops the flow of God's blessing and wholeness in your life. Jesus encouraged people in faith, but he says, be aware that you have been given faith, but faith can be choked by unbelief. This is what he says in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, and Paul is writing the church in Ephesus. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. The wiles there is methodia, the trickery, it means, the cunning and the deceit of the devil. All right? Don't wrestle with people, flesh and blood, But you wrestle against spiritual powers, against principalities, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. What he's saying here is that you need to be aware, folks, that what the devil will come to you, your circumstances are not the issue, they're not the fight. The fight is to stay convinced in the middle of it all and not doubt that God is who he says he is. That's the battleground. And he says that this methodia, the only thing the devil can do is to come and to deceive you about who God is. He will come every day and say he's not faithful. He will not heal. He will not prosper. He will not bless. And Jesus says, be on your guard for that. All right? Because you have been given this gift through Christ where nothing is impossible for you. And what does the devil do? He comes along and says, I don't think that's possible. You get it? And so we're talking about two different things. He's saying that this gift that God has given you will be tainted and will be polluted by unbelief. So that's why he talks about doubt and unbelief. And he encouraged people in their faith. Because faith was all about him and what he had done, and doubt and unbelief is how we work it out. How it gets tainted. And is anybody learning something here this morning? This will free you once it drops, honestly. The devil will plant seeds of doubt about God's character, his nature, his promises, his love, his goodness, and his intention. And when those things are left unchecked, they grow. They grow up and they choke your ability to have faith and to believe. It's what's described somewhere in the Bible as the cares of this world, in that parable. And what happens is, as the cares of this world come, people then tie themselves up in knots because they then make it about themselves. Where am I on the faithometer? Okay? But Jesus talked about guarding your heart against unbelief. He said, if you've got this gift, then guard your heart against unbelief. And I have to remind myself on days when really it's a struggle to go, honestly, I've been given the gift of God in me where nothing's impossible. And this is not the world, that kind of airy, fairy, fluffy up there. Kind of nothing's impossible. You know, you can be whatever you want to be. Kind of reach for the stars. You know, all that sort of stuff. Did I just sing S Club 7? That's a moment right there. Okay. Oh, gee, pray for Andrew. Hashtag pray for Andrew, all right? It's not about that. It's not about that at all. It's not about empty promises and false promises. It's about actual promise built on the one who holds it all. And he says, you know, whatever you've got going on in your life, nothing's impossible. Will you believe? Nothing's impossible. Will you believe? Nothing's impossible. Will you believe? And I continually find myself going, you know, there's different degrees of me believing and not believing. And I need help with it. So this is the problem. We're going to, over these next few weeks, learn to guard our hearts. And as we know in Proverbs 4:23, it says, guard your heart above all else. Guard that enormous potential on the inside of you. Guard that gift of God above everything else. Because out of that, your life's going to operate. Don't fight your circumstances. Don't fight people. Don't get angry. Don't try to get even. Don't try to set yourself against them. Guard your heart. Guard the gift of God. Guard the potential of God, because it's enormous. If you'll guard that, then nothing will be impossible for you. And so all of a sudden, my attention and my focus simply turns to, well, the only way I can guard my heart is to keep myself mindful of Jesus. Keep myself focused on Jesus. Keep Jesus being revealed to me. And God, it stops me from my effort and enables me to receive. Isn't it flipping scandalous how good his love is for us? Where he says the effort and the pain and the trying, just will you ever give it a rest and allow me to love on you perfectly and completely? As you do that, you're going to see belief working in tandem with faith. So let me do this very quickly. I'm going to give you these and it'll help. So what is the deal, okay? That more than words, we have to get a wee bit like under the hood of language here. Because like I said, most translations of the Bible only use faith and belief. And they use them sometimes interchangeably. But certainly when it comes to belief, they only have one word, okay? Actually, Jesus used four words in the New Testament, which are all translated as the one as belief. Now, we decide what we think primarily by what people tell us. This is really important. And sometimes what we hear from people's mouths can be pretty convincing. I want to be careful, okay? But what I have learned with people is I really tend not to trust what comes out of their mouths. Is that very cynical as a pastor? Yes, it is. Oh, crap. I'm in trouble. Hashtag pray for Andrew. It's going to be like a multi-use hashtag. This is hashtag pray for Andrew. All right? I tend to look at what you do rather than what you tell me. Call me cynical. But I'm kind of learning that. To go, actually, what we'll see, not that you're not allowed to make a mistake, okay? But over a period of time, what you tend to see is what's really in somebody. And so the problem is sometimes what we hear from Christians is, yeah, I believe for that. And it comes out from the teeth out. And Jesus said, let me look at your heart. You know, it's like the time I bought this sounds so bad. I went on a missions trip and bought a fake tag watch, right? There is a story to it. And I actually didn't want to buy the fake tag watch. The missions pastor bought it for me, okay? And this is the truth. I went to Vietnam and we were in this place and he said, oh, look at those. Those are brilliant. I'm going, but it's not real. He says, doesn't matter. Just you're helping the local community, all that stuff. So I bought it. It was like 20 quid. And it looked brilliant for about 3 months. And then all of a sudden, you know, 24 hours became six. As the thing went, I didn't know what day of the week it was. And all of a sudden, and then when I looked at it, it wasn't actually a Tag Heuer or Tag Heuer or whatever it's called. It was a TIG something. You know, it's like, I actually didn't look at that quite as closely as what I should have done. And it was funny because, but for all intents, see, if the first time I came back and I put it, I said, hey, what do you think of that? Flip me, Andrew, that's lovely. Felt kind of right. And, you know, it was heavy. I don't know whether they put sand in it or something. And but I flipped me, that's awesome. I was going, I just treated myself on a mission trip. You know how it is? Nice tag, until it completely fell apart within 3 months. And it's interesting that, you know, many times we hear the words, I believe, but actually that's not any indication of what's really going on in your heart. And so can we just all release each other from the Christianese of, I believe, I'm standing in, and let's get real, because when there's reality and the light of God comes in, then things are able to change. I love it when a guy who stands before Jesus himself goes, I do believe, but help me when I don't. I thought that took guts. You know, what do? We go to God and we put a front on and we say, well, I can't let you in. I don't feel I can really show you what's going on here because I need to have faith. I need to show you that I'm really believing you. And he's going, seriously, I see right into the middle of you. What are you pretending for? Think about it. Take a step back and go, what's happening to the man or the woman who stands before the Lord and goes, I can't really be honest with you because I need to have faith. Who's then responsible? You are. You're back under law. Whereas under grace, you just stand there and you go, no, listen. What I love about it is the Lord can deal with your shortcomings. And he's not afraid one bit of them. He's not afraid of your insecurity. He's not afraid of your emotions going up and down. He's not afraid of your feeling. He's not afraid of any of that. He says, come as you are, and I will help you where you need it. Isn't that good? And so, well, I think it is anyway. I'm preaching myself in the good place this morning. See the rest of you? I think it's awesome. And so, it's like the rich young ruler. When the rich young ruler comes along, everything that comes out of the rich young ruler's mouth is perfect. Lord, master, teacher, bows before him, and the Lord looks at him and goes right to his heart and says, you've an issue here. It all on the outside, it looks perfect. Bowing before me, calling me Lord, calling me teacher, calling me master. What must I do to be more perfect than what I am? And the Lord looks at his heart and goes, no, hold on. See what's coming from the teeth out? Let's go from the inside out. And that's what grace does. All right. And so, do you want to know what these levels of unbelief are? And here's what I'm going to say to you. As you start to understand them, you can actually, even in your life, you can start to go, actually, when there's just a big paintbrush over do you believe or do you not, it leads to condemnation. You just go, oh, flip, here we go, I'm failing again. It's actually graded on a curve. Let me explain it to you. Now, what's going to be interesting here is that in Jesus, why he could talk like this was Jesus was the only man who ever lived who had his, you know, his private, his core belief at the very center of him. His private belief and his public belief perfectly in line. Let me explain it to you. If I was to talk to any one of you today, you will say something to me because you want me to think that it's true. So when we're in, let's say, women at the school gate or walking into work, what did you think of the football yesterday? Oh, great, da-da-da-da-da. Brilliant. Good weekend? Oh, it was fine. mean, really what went on with the kids drove you nuts. Your husband or wife drove you mental. You're tired. The washing's not done. The ironing's not done. The house is stinking. But you've just got your ass back to work and you're like, no, seriously, it was great. Okay? Because we just don't want you to believe anything wrong about me. That's what we call public belief. Those things can be very quickly challenged whenever circumstances change. Private belief is what I genuinely believe that I'm a giver. Let's use this one. Not looking at anyone in particular. Okay, it's really hard not to, yes, I believe in the goodness of God. And, I'm a giver, absolutely. 3 weeks into the month, looking a bit tight, tithing goes out the window. Giving goes out the window. Why? Because when circumstances squeeze, your private belief, this is what I truly, I tell myself I truly believe, then it changes. Right? Core belief is no matter what happens, no matter who's there, it never changes. No matter what the circumstances, no matter what's going on, if I'm a giver, I'm a giver. If I'm faithful, I'm faithful, etc. Do you understand? Jesus had those perfectly in line and we don't. So many times we think we believe things and we say it, but actually when circumstances will challenge, those things can go out the window. Do you understand that? And so what we need to do is we need to understand that about ourselves and go, that's okay because God's big and he's good and he can deal with that. But say, Lord, for those times when I've got this gift of faith that you've given me, but I just can't believe it, can you help me with what that is? Well, the first one is this, okay? It's at different levels. Let's look at Matthew 21:21. I'm going to put them up on the screen, and I'm going to give you these words. So Jesus answered and said to them, assuredly I say to you, if you have faith, right? So here's where he's going. If you have God's gift in you, right? And you do not doubt, then. And the word that he uses there is diakrino. And what it simply means is this, it's on a level where you kind of, it's quite superficial and you just hesitate or waver at times. You ever done that yourself? You have a wee fleeting moment of going, oh, flip. Go back to giving. What am I thinking? I'll get on with it and do it. Right? But there is that wee moment where you check yourself. Sweetheart, you know, check yourself. So it's a superficial level. So what Jesus is saying actually is you can have this gift of faith, you know, but If you don't waver, if you don't sort of on that superficial level, just keep going, then you'll see. All right. So he understood that just at a level, sometimes we waver. That's okay. All right. We can get help with that. He uses a different word in Matthew 14:31. Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said, "Oh, you have little faith." I'll talk about that next week. Why did you doubt? And he uses the word distazo. I think this is where most Christians, in these next two words, is where we live. Distazo means simply this. Jesus held out his hand, caught him and said, why are you halting between two opinions? Why do you have two views on this? Why do you have a double stance? Why can you not decide whether you want to go one way or the other? So you see, that's more than superficial. That's where we actually live in the place where we just can't really decide whether or not we're going to fully commit to being givers, as an example. Or serve, or lend, or whatever it is. Where we have two views and Jesus says, you know what? Why do you live like that? You know, it says in James, a double-minded man will receive nothing from the Lord. There's perfect consistency throughout the word, and this is the word that Jesus is using. He sees beyond the superficial, and he goes, you've got two minds. You're two-minded. You're double-minded here. You're going to have to decide one way or the other. Is God, am I who I am? Have I done what I've said I'm going to do? Well, why do you hold two views? Do you get that? So that goes a little bit deeper. The next one is, and I'm going to unpack some of these in real life in the next few weeks, Matthew 13:58. Now, he did not do many mighty works there, okay, because of their unbelief. The same word, doubt, unbelief, okay? And this is the word apistia. And this is where we don't believe in God's willingness or ability to alter circumstances. He uses this word when he goes into the village and people didn't receive healing. And what's really interesting here is, you know that, and he says he can only heal a few, but then he moves on because they wouldn't receive from him. Well, this word apistia is, I think, where most of us live, where what we do is we may say it, but somewhere in us, we don't have it in us, really. Because things have choked us, disappointments, past experience. But that willingness to believe that God is willingness and he has the ability to change our circumstances. That's what he was talking about there. He says, now he couldn't do many mighty works. Why? Because the people didn't believe that he was able or willing or had the heart to change their circumstances. If you live like that, that's a different level again. When you hear, people today hear that Jesus is their healer and they refuse to receive it. They make up all the reasons, and Jesus says, calls that doubt and unbelief. He uses this word. But many of us do that. We look at our situation and we go, Lord, whatever I might say to try to convince myself. And that's why I think it's good to speak the word out, but let the word come out as a result of what God's done in your heart and not some kind of crazy word of faith thing to try to create faith, because it doesn't work because it's a gift. Do you get that? All right? But whenever you live in such a way where there's a lack of confidence for God's promise, then what do we see? In that village, God moved on. And I'm going to help you with all of this at the end. But what we see is superficial. Then the next level we see, I have two opinions on this. And God knows that and he's okay with it. He says, come and I'm going to help you with that. Then he goes, there is people who just go, I don't believe that God will change this. I don't believe that he will heal today. I don't believe that I'll get that promotion. I don't believe that he will bless. And then the last word in Ephesians 5:6, it's the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Apatheia, apathy is where we get that word. And that means an obstinate refusal to believe. That's where people go, I absolutely no way believe that. People who won't receive Jesus today because they go, I don't believe that crap. Not a chance. Jesus, fairy stories for the kids to get them to sleep. I obstinately refuse to believe that he is the Son of God. And so that level, but what is really interesting here is that before you get to that stage, it is possible for a believer to have the gift of God but still struggle with the promise of God, and Jesus says, it's okay, I can help you. Is that not good news? Is anyone, I know for me, I'm going, brilliant. The pressure is off me. The pressure is off me. Oh, what do I need to do? What do I need to do to receive? Well, let me finish and we're going to be done. See, the question of whether or not you believe has been totally misunderstood. You want to believe more. Can I just say, here's how belief increased in my life. Stop focusing on it. Stop looking at it. All right? Stop worrying about it. Because when you have a big view of your belief and your faith, it's all about you and not about Jesus. And you're back under the law, folks. And you've been redeemed. The law doesn't add a jot to you. You don't stand before the Lord and go, I have got great faith. You stand before the Lord and say, it was your faith in me. And Lord, I guarded my heart against wavering. I guarded my heart against being double-minded. I guarded my heart against that moment where I just could not believe that you would heal when I'd seen so many disappointments. I guarded my heart there, and then I saw the fullness. Stop worrying about it. That's where I'm going to start this series. Because what you're going to see is as Jesus gets bigger and his revelation gets bigger. You know, because can I just say, belief is not a goal in itself. Jesus is the goal. Belief's not a goal. Too many people focus on that. It becomes a focus of attention. Can I just say that belief is the byproduct of a relationship with Jesus. The more relationship there is, the more belief there will be. The lack of belief and the more doubt simply means that those things have got bigger and crowded Jesus in you. And so I want to say to you this morning, Ephesians 3:17-20, and with this I am done. Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. These are some of my favorite verses. That you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have the strength to comprehend with all of the saints what is the breadth, the length, the height, and the depth. And to know, to experience what? The love of Christ. That goes beyond all knowledge. That you may be filled with all the fullness of God. What we're going to discover over these next few weeks, I had this picture in this series of us getting loosed off the chains of awful teaching, to be honest. That's a controversial statement right there. Well, who do you think you are? Well, do you know what? I've got the stage, so I'm going to say it. Bite me. All right? But honestly, as I've seen believer after believer, and even in my own life, worrying not, you know, the methody, the trickery of the devil to keep them so self-focused on whether or not they had it or they have it. And all the Lord says is, I've already given it to you. Everything you need is already on the inside of you. You don't need anything more because you've got the gift of God. Now, can I show you that my love, my grace, and my favor, unlimited, unmerited, undeserved, over your life, as you get deeper and deeper and more mindful and completely enveloped in my love and my commitment for you, my grace and my promise for you, the byproduct will be not great faith, because you have faith, but it'll be a lack of unbelief and walking in belief. And when you've got that, then nothing's impossible. I think for some of us, we need to get past that and say, you know what, Lord, whenever I hear nothing is impossible, my first reaction is disappointment. To go, well, I've never lived that. Or I want to see more of it. To go, I'm going to claim that one. If I have got the gift of faith given to me, God's faith in me, nothing's impossible. Let me encourage you. Here's your homework for this week. Stop trying. Start trusting. Start receiving. But stop. Please stop trying. He loves you perfectly and completely. He has deposited in you right now the Holy Spirit of God. You have everything you need. And for those moments where you go, am I wavering? Have I got two opinions? Have I just lost the ability to believe that he will do that? That his promise is true? You might be completely apathetic, completely obstinate, refusing to believe. Either way, wherever we're at, the bigger revelation of Jesus and his love will change that for you. Amen.